This is a podcast where I, Tyler Byrne, I talk to authors, I chat with publishers, and I get to know the people that I am curious about and want to know a little bit more, people that I've encountered over the internet over the past few years or so. I am a fan of indie literature. I have been for about 10 or 15 years now, and this is my way of communicating and introducing these fine group of people to you guys. Today on the show, I'm talking to Shelby Hartness. I met Shelby through Ben Fama's workshop and cool memories. Thing is, over time, you see who continues to write and put out work. Because think about the workshops. I've taken a lot of workshops, and I myself have not published. So, but very rare to actually see someone committed to putting work out. It's a struggle. But I want to try and foster anything that I can, any sort of energies towards the new group of people. I feel like there's like a new wave of writers coming up that like in their 20s, late 20s, whatever age, that are coming from these workshops. But how do you maintain the fun energy from the workshops, the group atmosphere? It's very hard to like go from a group atmosphere in the workshop and then you're left on your own and you lose all that energy. It happens every fucking time. I wanted to ask you, I saw something in 2014, you got to hang out with Taylor Swift.
Yes.
how did that come about?
Yeah, that's funny. Well, I was a really big fan of hers growing up. And I guess I was like active on social, and her team reached out to me, and it was the beginning of those secret sessions on like her very first time that she did them. So for every album, she would invite people to her house, but we had no press about that. So it was actually the weekend I was supposed to move in to college. So I drove up to Portland, took a flight to, my mom's a flight attendant, so I can like fly for free. Mm-hmm. We didn't have any info. I thought it was just going to be like maybe a concert to release for 1989. But we go, and she like, her team chauffeurs us in this like limousine bus, and we literally drive to her house in Beverly Hills, show up, and we're just in her living room listening to her new album. And you know, we got to chat. She like made us cookies, and I met her cats, and it was very, very chill.
How did she connect? How did she reach out to you?
She has a team. Like, It wasn't her directly.
Okay.
Yeah.
But, like, you were, like, following her? Like, how do you sign up for that?
She has this thing called, like, Taylor Nation. But I don't, you know, it's dorky. But, like, that's their job, essentially, is to, like, track people.
Oh, really?
So, and it was before Instagram was huge. Twitter was big. But I think I just was always like posting like happy about her new albums and stuff. And they just knew that, and I was like Bay Area local. So it was people from the West Coast that got invited. But she has like four different houses. So she did it at like each house.
Oh, yeah. Really?
Yeah, she has one in New York, one in Nashville. She had one in London.
Oh, wow.
But yeah.
So when they reached out to you, did you think it was fake or real?
I was at a doctor's office appointment, I remember, and I was like, this is the real email, but I was like, this isn't, I don't know. I didn't believe it, but I also had been invited to the Ellen show, and I got to go. So I was kind of like just serendipity with these moments in my life.
Mm-hmm.
Well, shit, maybe it is real and it's worth it to me to try. But it was funny because at the time my dad's like, you need to go to your orientation. You know, you need to go to college. I'm like, I don't care about that. I'm going to try to go to Taylor Swift's house. And thank God I did.
So you had to
Polaroid. That was like the only evidence I got. And then she had a little video.
Well, you're on BuzzFeed.
I'm on BuzzFeed?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
it shows
yeah.
like all the people that went.
Yeah.
So
I heard people reach out to me after, like news people reach out to me.
So they reached out, the Taylor Swift team, they reached out by email. They like got your email.
Yeah. Yeah.
Were you already following them, like submitted your email for like newsletters and stuff?
I had followed, I don't know if I was following them, but I mean I was signed up for her newsletter. So the newsletter and her website is connected to like Taylor Nation.
Okay. And they probably like checked out your age and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, like is Taylor Swift, does she have like an influence on your poetry and your writing?
Originally, I would say yes. I don't think I'm at, especially after this whole like Eras Tour situation, I would say that I lost that connection.
For real?
Not in a way that I mean, she was a huge part of me, honestly, going back to my writing during COVID, because I had been on another path. I was really looking towards journalism. And then I was in a place where I was in a relationship. I was at like a barista inside Facebook. I had moved back to the Bay Area, which I didn't think I was going to do. And so my writing kind of faded away. And I mean, I was doing journalism. I was interested in creative writing when I was in college, and I did do things there. And I think when I was younger, I was an only child. So like, I don't know, I looked at Taylor and was inspired by her writing and excited, like she just excited me. I felt like it was good for me to have some sort of like person outside of myself where I could be like, oh, that's aspirational. But then during COVID, when everything locked down, I started writing again. And then when Folklore was released, which is her like COVID album that she kind of dropped, that's got involved with the National and everything, I started listening to those songs and I was like, I could write like this, which is, you know, kind of bold of me to say, but I was honestly just kind of in a space where I could see her like creating stories for the first time. And I did that already on my own. And I just kind of dove in, and it gave me the permission to just sort of explore in that way and not have any like boundaries because everything was locked down. And I was already like fighting a lot in my life. So I just used that as an escape. And I think that's how I started writing poetry so much. Yeah.
Why? What do you mean that you're fighting so much?
I was in a bad situation, like living life. I mean, home life.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just bad situation with my parents, in a toxic relationship. And then I was being asked, I was actually in LA at the time, in this like really ethereal environment. I had worked at this pretty renowned magazine, and I stayed in touch with with my coworkers there. And they had this really great place in Mount Washington, Los Angeles. And I went to Catsit for 3 weeks. And it was the first time that I got to leave, because I was living at, I went and moved back home to my parents' house. And I got to, well, actually I was living with my ex at the time. Either way, it was my first like independence in a very long time. And it was this beautiful home, like nestled in the Los Angeles Hills. And I was hanging out with these cats in the sun, and her album released. And I was just like, okay, I have freedom again. And that's sort of what I was escaping. I was like trying to grasp at my own freedom through my writing, through escape, and like thinking that I had a future again.
So was that D Magazine?
No, it was Kinfolk Magazine.
Okay.
Which was like huge in 2014 during that time. It had like hit 1 million followers. It's huge in like Asia. They had moved their headquarters to Copenhagen. And I was the youngest intern that was hired. And then I got promoted to... I mean, that's where I started seeing writing as like, I was in an editorial room. I was interested in those stories. And so, yeah, that's sort of where that led me.
I remember that magazine. Is it still around?
It is. It's really odd, like, because it had a cult following.
Yeah.
And it was very idealistic. And I mean, everyone that I worked with was really great and really welcoming, but I also felt like I was stepping into like this other world, like this like culty, uber like beautiful, prestigious world that I didn't know I had access to. So being invited to cat sit for them, I was just like, but they're also, I mean, I'm friends with them now. I ended up nannying her kids and they're really great, but I just still, I didn't have that in my life growing up. So
Were there like weird restrictions that they like placed on you? No.
no.
How'd you get into journalism?
When I was working there is when I decided to change my major. I was just doing like general communications, and that's when I wanted to study journalism. So I started applying to other schools. I got into University of Washington. And that's actually like when I went there, it was my junior year. So I was living in Seattle and I started with their journalism program. And I felt like the political climate at the time, Trump had just gotten elected when I was there. It was my first election that I voted for. And I just got really interested in being involved in like in politics and being on ground reporting, and that's sort of where I got my drive.
What was growing up in California like?
It was, I lived on the coast of San Francisco, so in this little town called Half Moon Bay. Honestly, like probably the best place that I could ask for to live environmentally. However, it was a very small community. So everyone knew everyone, but the ocean was my backyard. Like I could see it from my house. And I think that's probably what inspired me the most growing up, was just having this like beautiful landscape, but also this like aggressive want to do more. And just not to be around the people that I always knew, because every time you went outside, like somebody recognized you, and just it could be a little small-minded, I think.
So then why did you move out to like Arkansas?
Well, escaping a situation again, my family, my whole dad's side of the family is from Arkansas. It kind of happened on a whim. I wasn't working. I was trying to find work after graduating with my MFA, and it was kind of like a last minute decision. My parents got divorced 2 years ago.
How was that?
Terrible.
Yeah?
Terrible.
Even being older?
Oh yeah. I was in the middle of the relationship for like my whole life. So I think writing too was like my escape from that. I was always kind of, I'm like I said, I'm an only child, and living back there during COVID, I just was always like in the middle, protecting the dynamic, protecting the peace, and it just kept getting worse and worse. And yeah, I moved out to LA when they finally decided. I was 26, I'm 28 now. But it was like something that I had been begging to happen since I was 16. But I think as an adult, you envision, you don't, I didn't have the chance to really, like, I had to grow up very fast. And I didn't have the like the chance to mourn that part of my childhood because I was always fighting it. So I think I'm processing a lot of the grief later, and especially being here, because growing up, coming to Arkansas was always like the most fun escape for me, or I keep saying that word escape, but like this fun place that I could dip my toes into that always ended up being positive and interesting and fascinating. I had this dichotomy in my life of like the West Coast, it being liberal. We did live in a farming town. We did have this massive amount of beauty, but I do think they're polar opposites. And you know, so are my parents. So I think like you have me in the middle trying to figure it all out. And I think you can tell a lot of that in my writing and like just in my personality. I'm always very interested in people and like very empathetic, but I do feel like there is such, I don't know, there's a certain amount of abrasive lack of authenticity that I feel in both places. I don't know.
In your writing?
No.
Okay.
In Arkansas and California.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Why not move out to like New York City or something?
You know, I'd love to. I think I was financial stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I just couldn't really, I was in a rut, I wanted to move to Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
That's what my plan was. I had thought that that was going to happen. I had sort of a relationship there. I had friends there. I loved it there, but things kind of fell apart very quickly. And I had to leave very quickly. So I just like got in my car and drove without thinking.
Mm-hmm.
This was in March. So it's very new.
Okay.
And I got a job here, actually started a new job this week. I'm like a communications coordinator, office job, first nice. Salaried job. So it's interesting. I definitely don't want to be here for too long, but I'm trying to like approach it as a social experiment or something.
So how'd you find Ben's class?
I think Ben was one of the first poets to really inspire me. His book, Fantasy, I was obsessed with. I took this when I was at University of Washington. They had advertised this creative writing workshop with NYU in Paris. I applied and got in.
Wow.
And I was at that point in my writing life with poetry where I wasn't being super competitive. Like, it was very playful. Poetry was something that I kind of taught myself. And when I got to that program, it's going to tie together because I brought his book with me. And I brought a ton of books with me. It was kind of dramatic. My whole suitcase had like 20 books in it.
Nice.
but when I got there, Matthew Rohrer was there, Catherine Barnett, who were pretty big names, especially in the New York poetry scene. And I can't remember the other writer, but we were, we studied at their facilities there. It was like 20th floor. You could see the Eiffel Tower from the room. It was crazy nuts. But one of the workshop activities that Matthew gave us was choose a book, like print out all the lines from the book and cut them up and kind of place them together. And Fantasy, I think, is the book that I chose. And we didn't publish this or anything. It was just sort of for fun to be playful. But that really stuck with me. And I feel like I thrived there. I really like those like cutout activities, like just being really playful with writing. And so I followed him since. And I think just like saw cool memories, loved the title of that workshop, showed up, and it went so well, you know.
Mm-hmm. How did you find about, how did you find out about
it? Probably Instagram, I think.
Have you showed him the poems that you like redid?
No, that was so long ago. I'd have to see, you know, because I think I took a photo of it, you know, but I didn't like actually, because we were kind of manually doing it. But no, I never told him this, I don't think. Wow.
I think you would love that.
Yeah, I think he was the first, no, second. Second person to publish a poem of mine. And I was just so shocked because I listened to the episode that you did with him. And it's so interesting because I almost didn't go back to finish my MFA. I went through a really traumatic time. And to hear like you guys or even you like bringing up, oh, she's doing so great, whatever. It's just, you know, I didn't even realize I had 20 poems published until a couple months ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
you have a lot.
I know, it's wild, and I'm trying to start saying it out loud. I'm trying to like start telling people that this happened because I have a lot of people in my life who maybe don't see the value in my writing or poetry, but also primarily myself maybe is the doubt. But you know, it's good to like kind of notice that because it's not always you don't always remember it yourself.
Because my perception of you was like, you're someone that keeps your head down and you just like commit to the work. And you're just like committing to the poems and committing to this poetry thing.
Yeah.
So it's surprising
I was
to
really
hear that.
Committed. I was really committed. And I'm really like astonished in myself for how much I did in the environment that I was in. I was trapped in COVID for a very long time. I know everyone was, but in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it was just excessive. And this was just my safe space. And it was interesting when I took it, because I was doing workshops a lot. I did Ben's, and I also did this poet Michael Chang's workshops. But I was doing the workshop thing before I even thought about my MFA. And I think I applied 2021. And when I was applying, it was a very last minute decision. I was kind of like looking at what the, because people had been talking about it. And I was looking at the requirements, like how many poems do you need? And I started like counting the amount of poems I had. I'm like, oh shit, okay, I can, you know, I can do this. Like, fuck it, I'll try. So I just like made it my job, you know, to just start applying. And I didn't have a lot of time. And the essays really stressed me out, but
mm-hmm.
I got it done and I accepted into that program. I went to St. Mary's College of California. I really wanted it to be my ticket out of California because I just wanted to get out of that house. But I did it. And it was interesting. And
what do you mean?
What do you mean?
What do you mean interesting?
I mean, it's not what I thought it would be.
How so?
And I went on medical leave for a year. Yeah, so I think a lot of my life kind of changed in that regard. That sort, there's kind of like a before and after for me for that, and then also COVID. But when I started, I mean, 3 out of 4 of the semesters I spent at the program were in masks. So that created, you know, a sort of distance. There were some difficult dynamics I experienced at the program. There was a lot of turnover of professors and directors. It wasn't as rigid as...
Uh-oh. Hello.
Hi.
So you were saying it wasn't as rigid as you thought it would be?
Yeah. Or like rigorous.
Okay.
Maybe rigid isn't.
Did rigid. You want to be pushed harder?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I wanted it to be like my whole life. That's what I wanted. I wanted it to be intensive, but it was more of a commuter program.
More relaxed?
Yes. And I'm hesitant to talk too negatively about it because I feel like, I don't know, maybe I shouldn't be hesitant, but there were some weird things that I experienced from professors. And there was also like racism happening in the program that was really messed up. And
oh, for
I was
real?
And I was trying to support my cohort members, and I feel like it was taken the wrong way by some of the professors, which didn't feel great because I'm like, this shouldn't be the way that it is. And the fact that I was I got a scholarship for I think 70%, but I had to take a loan out. I banked some of my own cash into this program, and I'm like, I was having second guesses when I started. I moved myself out to Oakland, and I hadn't lived over there before, but I wanted to like be close enough. It's pretty far out there. And I remember expressing to the director, like, hey, I'm struggling. This isn't feeling like people are that involved. Aria Aber was one of my professors, and she's like huge now. I'm really happy I got time with her, but there was situations with her that like not towards her that weren't like she wasn't being accepted or whatever, and I was just really confused. Maybe I don't know if I'm saying the right things. I don't want to go too overboard on it, but it didn't make me feel great. And
Were they
people
just like,
left.
were they disrespecting like
Yes.
professors or the students?
Yes.
Yes, on both ends.
I feel like there was some things going on with students that were messed up, and then there were things going on with with professors that were messed up and program directors. It was just all kind of weird. And when I went in, I later found out that there were situations where the students had felt this way before I even came in. So it was like this hush hush. And I just didn't, it sucked that that was going on because I didn't, everyone's all amped up. We've all been locked down for a long time. It was half hybrid for a while. So everyone's, I want to give everyone the benefit of the doubt in that regard. But I wasn't there to be quiet. I was there to work hard and study and like create community. And it just felt like there were a lot of roadblocks for that.
Did that take away from the work that you were trying to focus on?
I think so. And I had different experiences, like every semester felt like a different experience, especially because I had this unique situation of coming back for a third year because of that medical leave. So I had new students with me. I think that last semester was incredible. I created a lot of community. I feel like things shifted. There was more like the directors changed. There was more community involved. There was more like outer activities to kind of keep us together. But in terms of my writing, I felt like I had it did create a different relationship with my poetry, like a more academic stance. And I had never been in that situation where I was writing to be like formally read like that. And every teacher had a different way of relating to your work and just different expectations. And I think, I mean, I always say this, like I'll be in therapy and be like, I'm not writing. I don't feel like a writer. I don't feel like a poet. And it's probably because a lot is going on in my life at the time. And then it'll come back. But that voice kind of comes in and out of me. And I regret that in some ways, taking it into that space because I feel, people have, one of my friends went transferred to Columbia, and I would love to chat with her and see what her experience is like with her work now because I know it's a different program, and I'm not saying that because it's a more prestigious school. I'm just curious, like, even if I had another friend who went to wherever, I'd just be curious because it does do something to your writing. I think a more relaxed workshop like Ben's, you're kind of in a different community than you are in an MFA, and it's doing it something different when you have. Does that make sense?
Yeah, if you were to teach your own course, how would you do it differently than your professors did?
I love that question. Because I think I would love to see myself like leading a course sometime. I think that would be fun. I'd love to have poetry like more at the forefront of my life again. I think maybe teaching it at a different time of day. Kind of doing bringing different material into the equation. I love the idea of it being more hands-on and less like there's a lot of people who will come in and feel anxious to share their work, like creating less of a round table situation and more of a I don't know, not that it wasn't a safe environment, but just like less intimidating. I did have a teacher. Rachel Richardson, who I feel like at the beginning of our last semester asked us more about like what other forms of art inspire you. And we, I know some people were musicians, or like for me, I'm into film. And so bringing those different elements into it, like creating a more multimedia platform maybe for the poetry, but I don't know. Like, I'm looking at this painting, like what would happen if you like spent 30 minutes painting and then started writing, you know?
I think that's a great idea.
I think it's nice to kind of take yourself out of then, and also like letting it be less like no fluorescent lighting. If we can like take it outside, do something different, walk around, like really just like be in your body more. Like, how can you feel? Because I feel like when you create that trust, safety, and intimacy within the classroom, I think you're going to get the best feedback. You're going to feel your safest, your most creative. Like, let it be okay to make mistakes. Let it be okay to like speak honestly and openly towards each other, because that's what you need. Yeah. Yeah, that's what I think.
Was the classroom just like a toxic environment? Like, where they, you felt like you had to make every perfect, like every decision had to be perfect? Or they were too critical?
No, but there were times, like, I think like an MFA classroom can just have so much intensity to it. And I think back, because I had different experiences each semester because we had a different workshop leader each semester. But if I think back to when I remember one time I was had a panic attack, and that doesn't, you know, feel good. And then there was one teacher who was just really dominating and could be aggressive, and or there would just be silence, and I just would hope that there would be more conversation involved. I think that's what I was craving at different times, but it wasn't like that at the end. But it could be like, there was one time when someone would read their poem and then you would all have to go around in a circle and say something. And I just feel like there was some animosity towards certain people. I mean, you can't make, nothing's going to be perfect. Not everybody is going to like each other, but there should be a bare minimum respect.
Yeah.
So I'm not trying to like shit on the program, but I do feel like it was just interesting. It's not the way, I think if I can try to think back, because it's been a while since I started. It's 2025 now. And I think I started in 2021. So, you know, it's been 4 years, but I do think I remember after being like, damn, like I really left all my online workshops that I took from, I did one at Austin Batcave in Texas. I did one at a program here in Arkansas. I did that NYU one. And I just always left feeling so inspired.
Yeah.
And I wasn't feeling that way at all. And that's disappointing.
Yeah, there was a poem that you mentioned, The Shining.
Oh, yeah.
It was on Spectra Poets.
Yes, yes. That was such an intense... That poem's called The Executioner. And it was originally called The Elevator. And I think that was one of, like, my most intense poems that I've ever written. I was really, that was kind of at the turning point where I was about to like have a very traumatic episode, but it was a breaking point too, like breaking free. And I was staying at this cabin in Half Moon Bay, and it was just absolutely beautiful, like stunning, but I was at the lowest point of my life. Excuse me. So I felt like this like odd juxtaposition where this cabin is at the edge of the cliff. I felt like Virginia Woolf, like just out there floating. Like, you could see the water from my window in the shower, and I had this perfect writing room. Smoked a little weed out on the cliff, came back, and just, like, nailed this poem. And I mentioned The Shining, and I hadn't even seen that movie yet, which is crazy. But I just had this weird relationship, and I also mentioned Heathcliff, which is, like, I think... Do you know who that's from? It's one of the older English books.
I thought it was about
the
cartoon cat.
No.
Okay.
It's like Bronte or something, I think. Like, someone can fact check me. But it's just, I was thinking of all these, like, literary characters or, like, movies that had intense impact. But I watched The Shining for the first time when I was visiting this boy in Colorado, in Denver, and that's where it was actually set. And it's just weird because I'll have these moments, like flashbacks of memory of scenes, of movie scenes. So yeah, movies bring me a lot of inspiration. But Dorothy Alasky wrote a whole poetry book about The Shining.
Oh, wow.
Last year. I got a lot of inspiration from that, and I read that before I watched the movie. I really like horror movies. What else?
Do you want to read the Spectra poem?
Me?
Yeah.
Sure. Okay. Came out 2023. I wrote it in 2022. And shortly after is when I went on my medical leave. Executioner. Ingenuine. The ease with which rice, soft spot, unhappy with feeling, a brain too disruptive, maraschino floating Heathcliff, her curls and ratchet, notes off the coast correspondence, a long pause touches to the third eye, only a gaze in the mirror met by theater, screens to make a fool out of you. She thought you felt the ribbon inside her, bellowing forth to fill her days again. A walk the wrong way to Lexi's room, climbing the wall to fall back with the horses. On the acupuncture table, Bafsha somehow releases his face out of me, sitting there unnamed, still asking for a favor. Kind of obsessed with the touch. I wouldn't know how to tell what hurts. All this necessary pain, a crown in the closet, crowded my life, fucked by days of repetition, bending over for a shoreline, rain on the mirror inside my feet, the splinter that stayed there, too shy to say anything. I somehow couldn't brush her shoulder. Displayed petals open there in Florida. So much life used to happen, tore off through torrential weather, treated kindness like a dark bruise under the table. Thighs felt something thorn her barrier, not the audience she wanted. It was snow. It was all the hours and the sour, taking up space in the cup holder, not thinking twice. It was Shelley Duvall in The Shining, the video our only recording, how the girls took a shower together in the backyard for you, barely a view, and it was her idea. White cloth wasted a pinnacle. It was the way the ceiling met the curtain, and I cared a great deal. For a face, I pressed the current, I folded the blanket. Genuinely fluorescent and incorrigible, but beautiful, were the lights on the railing. I slept inside an elevator control booth until the rose reached the very top.
Thank you.
Thanks. Well, I'm curious how that poem resonates with you.
It's such a different poetry or poem style than any of your other poems. Like, all your other poems are they're quiet and small, and then in that way it makes them even more intense.
Right.
And that one felt like it's a very long It's like one of your longest poems.
I think so. It's interesting reading it because I notice a lot of different moments in my lifetime kind of being wrapped up there. I don't think I write to be read in a very like chapter by chapter way. It's not very, I don't know how it lands much for other people, but I know I was told at the beginning of my program that it's not like a timeline. Like you're not really reading it it's left for interpretation. I'm pretty like esoteric in a way, like about the way I piece scenes together, but it made sense in my mind. I jump, I leap a lot. But that moment where I talk about like the girls took a shower in the backyard for you, that's a moment that I remember coming home from college and one of my best friends and I took a shower together upstairs and there were boys outside and I was like, I don't know if we were doing it to be like playful together, but I had never like showered with a girl in that age before. And it was kind of like this intimate moment between us being vulnerable in my body, but also like putting on a show for the guys outside. acupuncture, like huge part of my healing, but that actually happened. I was in treatment and this random memory of this guy, I think probably from middle school, came up and just like popped into my head and out of my body. And I don't know, I was suffering for a very, very long time alone at my house with my family in silence. People didn't really know that I was going through it. Like, I think I kept a lot of things to myself. I put on a happy face. And I suffered with this disease of pulling my hair out. It's called trichotillomania. But it's something that happens, I think, because there's a lot of abuse going on at home. And I didn't tell anyone. So I kind of did it to myself. And then finally, it got to the point where I couldn't take it anymore. And I left and I ended up shaving my head to cope and went on medical leave because that was just, I didn't know what I was doing. I needed to heal. I got away from my family and it really, really, really was huge for me because I didn't, you know, it was a new relationship to my femininity. I haven't like formally come out as queer, but I am. I like both men and women. And I think that becoming this new person in my body, the only thing I can relate to that experience is when I got chicken pox that summer at 21 or 22. And, you know, you have like it all over your body. You look like you have the plague and it's humbling. You're like, well, people are going to look at me in a certain way, but, you know, I was mistaken for a man at one point. My body was like, I was very skinny. I struggled with an eating disorder. So it was just all of these things wrapped up and I was really dealing with it alone. But it changed my relationship to my writing. However, I think I was at the strongest point in my life in my writing before this all happened. So it's been, you know, a really interesting period of reflection for me as I've processed through all that. And then humbled myself, went back to school, showed up, and finished. I didn't think I was going to go back, and I'm really proud I did. And I don't want to give up on my writing, so I'm still fighting.
I could read your queerness through your other poems.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think I bring that up because it almost felt like it was forced upon me in a way because I looked different. No, I mean like forced upon me to come out maybe sooner than I want. Or like it's just interesting because I feel like I'm still like figuring it out. But it's always, I feel like I keep a lot of things private and then it comes and bubbles up and does dramatic things.
And it comes through your poetry.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. I definitely wrote like that poem that I got published with Ben was a like gay poem, like for sure. But it's fun to be able to express myself in this way that isn't being direct. That's being sexy and flirty and fun, but not needing it to be like I can just do it casually. It doesn't have to be this big deal. Yeah.
When you were reading that poem, it reminded me of this other poet, Caroline Rayner. She wrote this book called The Mown Wilds by published by Shabby Dollhouse. And it's like, I think you would really like that book.
Oh, I'd love to read it.
Yeah, it's a lot of the similar stuff. It's I like how you're not sticking to a same style. Like as you're emotionally changing in your life, your poetry is also changing, and you're challenging yourself in new ways.
Yes,
because I feel like some people might just stick to the same thing that they've been doing because they're totally scared to change.
Totally, or it's just comfortable, or just naturally. But I think that it's always been like, I don't stick to form. I let the form kind of arrive. I don't like set out to write a certain form. I let the words and ideas and consciousness kind of guide the way that I shape it. Because I have written in the past, like one line poems, like very tiny one liners, or I've never been like a strict form girl. So I think part of me going to school and like learning all about form maybe like hindered my creativity in a way because it put it into structure. But, you know, that's only as much as you take of it. You don't have to stick with that. I think there is absolutely value in understanding the art of the craft. But I also think poetry is like a very valuable thing to just let yourself play with. And not to put a lot of pressure on the way it looks, or I think that can stop you. Like, I already have enough things silencing me, so why not just like let it be free space.
Do you want to read one of your poems you published recently?
Sure. Sound bath with a bison?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. This is funny because I've never been to New Mexico, but I think that maybe this sparked from going to visit Joshua Tree. I lived actually with a makeup artist who works on like big movies in LA for a bit. And so I was like adjacent to that life. I don't know. I just made this one up. Sound bath with a bison. Reflected orange light off irises. There is cereal on the counter the dog drinks, and I walk tall to stare noise off the bed. Gia in the kitchen with her legs bare, setting records, a silver color dripping off the deck. When I walk into her studio, watch her feet hang loose and steady, almost not noticing the bison behind her head. I turn you around to face the rocks of New Mexico. She places the heel of her palm on my forehead. Breathe, she pressed each finger. I did what she said. Sometimes I feel more vocal when I let the room fill, jealous with silence. I like the air prescient, touched by nobody yet.
That's so good.
Really?
Yeah. Why
do you think it's good?
Because you're like, you're doing things that like, I feel like you could only do if you like read and written a lot. Like when you say like, I walk tall to steer noise off the bed. Like that's such, it's so good. And I don't know what it means, but it's like so good. And yet I do know what it means at the same time. It's like a feeling or a vibe.
Yeah, it's like when you wake up and you don't want them to hear you, so you, but it is funny, I'm saying like steer it, yeah.
Yeah, and then like a cereal on the counter, the dog drinks, It's just like these quiet, small, particular moments.
Well, thank you.
And like you have your own voice and you have your own perspective that I don't see in anyone else's work.
I really appreciate that.
Have you thought about making like your own magazine or something?
Oh, that would be so fun.
Yeah.
You know, that would be so fun. I will say, I really need poetry back in my life because I feel like I like kicked it aside for a while. Not intentionally, but the title of my thesis is called Bunny Year, which would be my first book. I do have like almost 80 pages, and I refer to Bunny Year as the year, like my gap year that I took for medical leave. Because it was, I know this is a pivot, but I was born in the year of the rat, and my idea of like how I was tending to myself that year is it was the year of the rabbit. And randomly when I was traveling through Palm Desert, I went to my aunt's friend's house, who's like this crazy big jewelry designer. And I was like head shaven, like a mess. I was going to see Taylor Swift the first night at the Eras Tour concert in Phoenix. And I was just like my first concert that I had been to post-COVID. I was not even wanting to go. I had like bought myself this purple wig to kind of mimic that scene with Natalie Portman. She had that like bob, that hot pink bob. And I was like, I'm going to go. It's going to be great. Whatever. I didn't feel that way. But I go in and I just feel so out of place. So I go outside and sitting outside and looking at the pool. And all of a sudden there's this baby bunny drowning. And I'm just like, what the fuck? Like I go and me and my aunt save this baby bunny, and everyone is just like kind of like indulging, and it's just this massive. And I just saved it, and I just couldn't believe it because it's the year of the water rabbit. I really got into Eastern medicine and like understanding the lunar calendar and all this. It really helped me kind of ground. And it felt like this, I just really believe in signs, and it just felt like this moment of, oh, okay, like if I'm tending to this baby bunny, like how can I treat myself less like this rat who's like running away from everything, killing herself? How can I be soft to myself? And I think that became reflected in my writing, and I'm always trying to get back to that. So Bunny Year, I think, will eventually be my first book, which I would like to say, but that would be really fun to do some sort of magazine too, or like create some sort of space for poetry out here as I'm working through living in the South next to my family.
Would you make it like a physical place, or would you do it online?
I mean, of course, the first thing to say is, oh, you could do online because that's easier. I love tangible objects, though. So it would be interesting to see like how that could come to light in a way.
Have you made any chapbooks?
No.
Or zines?
No.
I think you should.
Yeah, I haven't. No. Yeah, I should. I should do something.
When you sit down to write, does it just come out all at once, or do you work on these things for several months, several weeks?
Normally, it's an experience of it coming at once. Or more recently, I've struggled a bit. So it'll be like I'm jotting notes, or I'm jotting lines and lines and lines, and then I'm piecing them together. Like Sound Bath with a Bison, I think was a little bit different. I think I had stanzas, like I'll write stanzas, and then sometimes I'll drag them and like play with where they go. But typically, I would say it's a stream of consciousness event that appears to me.
Mm-hmm. And do you keep a journal?
My best ones. I'm so messy. Like I have so many, like this box of journals back there. It's one of my intentions since I moved all of my stuff from my childhood home I had to like go through all of my old notebooks and papers and stuff. So it's one of my intentions to kind of like transcribe all that and see what writing I have. But I'm the kind of person that keeps like multiple scattered journals and pages everywhere.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I want to get better at that.
It's
I
impossible. It feels impossible if I start like a journal, like on page one, and do like one entry. For some reason, a few weeks later, if I'm gonna do a journal, it's like it just happens in like another notebook.
I'm really working on being able to write without editing myself or like being able to write shitty sh words because I think it's important to be able to just sit down and be like, my therapist isn't saying, just write. I'm not doing well. Like, I noticed this. I noticed this. I think it would be good for me to be able to just write basically. I think that that's actually a strategy that can happen because I have this new job and I'm noticing her like just writing what she thinks. But as a poet, I write crazy shit. Like I can't write. I write things like steering noise off the bed. I don't write in normal
But
sentences.
it's so good though,
I thank you. And
because
I want,
there's so
yeah.
much feeling that comes out of that one line.
Yes. Yeah. I think that that is something that I am proud of and is a strength of mine, but it can be a hindrance as well if I'm not in a like creative space because then it's not coming out. But I go through phases, so.
What did the there was a line in the long poem, the first poem we read, The Executioner, about like fuchsia coming out of someone's face?
Fascia.
Fascia.
So fascia, do you know what that is?
No. That was a color.
No, fascia is like part of your muscle. It's like what I thought of it is because I struggle with like chronic pain. So it's when like you're working through the tendons and the muscle and it's like a part of your skin. So if you're
Okay.
thinking about it, it's like my skin is being penetrated in a way that it's actually releasing memory.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I recommend acupuncture to anyone because it really like can if you find the right person it does things to your body and energy that just like makes clarity appear in ways.
It like released a memory, like nostalgia or something.
Like unlocked a memory that I forgot I had. Like
Wow.
it just appeared in my brain. Well, I think that's a lot of trauma work is you've locked a lot away and it's important if I can to notice what happens when I let myself release those things, so I try to write it down. And I've done a lot of like self-processing because I think it affects my writing if I'm people pleasing. If I'm contorting myself to appease certain people or ways of life that I've been accustomed to, I'm not going to be writing my free poetry. So it's a lot of like this balance that I'm doing to create and anything I can do to make that happen because it's interesting to me and I'm glad it's interesting to you.
So you're 28 now. When you're 38, what would you like to have done in terms of poetry and maybe in your life?
It's a big question. I would love to, in terms of poetry, I hope that I have my book out. I hope that I can create a project in some way. I hope I have a community. I hope that I'm living freely, unadorned by anyone else's expectations. And I hope I love where I'm living. Simple things. Yeah, I don't know. I just randomly have this like vision of living in the desert somewhere. That would be really bad. 38, man. I don't know. Am I gonna have kids? I don't know. But I hope writing is at the center. I hope I can work in film too. I would, yeah. I think I every year I just hope that I can get braver and just like not give a shit and do what I want.
Do you hope that you have a chunk of your life where it's just like peaceful and like there's nothing happening
Of
extreme?
course. Who doesn't want peace? Yes, I would love peace. Yeah, I hope that I can just be away from and healed. That would be great. And I think I can do that. I know I can do that. Because there's a grind that we're all taught that we have to do. And of course it's hard because it's hard to be financially stable. But I think that if COVID taught us anything, like there is a way that things can change and have to change for everyone. It
You have a
doesn't.
gorgeous view.
Oh, thanks. They're oak trees. I'm on the first floor. We've got trees all around me. Really grateful for that. I'm in Fayetteville, downtown-ish, and we've got some good nature near me, which I appreciate.
You go like hiking?
I do. I just went on my first like little hike the other day. And I want to go to swimming holes. Water is my happy place growing up near the ocean. Like any body of water I can find, that makes me happy. So
Did you ever like hang out on a pontoon boat?
no, never.
Never?
Never.
Wow, you gotta do one of those.
Yeah. How long have you been in Tulsa?
My entire life. I live with my parents, so
Okay.
it's kind of the same situation you were describing earlier, but like they fight all the time.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, and it's like an everyday, you never know like if you're gonna upset them. So you're
Ugh.
like walking on eggshells. It would be nice to live on my own,
Yeah.
So I know I relate to what you were talking about earlier.
Mm.
Do you want to read one more poem?
Sure.
The one where like you're someone's stepping on your fingernails or something at the end. I forgot. I think it's ballerina.
You want me to read Ballerina? That's funny. This is my slutty poem.
Is
Not
it?
really. I mean, I have sluttier poems, but it shows a little bit of my kink, if you want to be honest. If you want me to be honest. Okay. But I'm so honest in my poetry. Okay. Ballerina. One night on the way to the cinema, modern air holding the spliff. It's not that I'm struck in a quiet sense. My mind rectangles a woman. She walks out of an enclave 2 feet off the Seine. Words sit tongued under. It's like this yellow light, hideous. A lover, lemons, eloquence, abandonment. If the room were to indicate a bad story, I'd refuse it. Really, it's you I want to examine me. Hands on the carpet, step on my fingernails.
It's so good, and there's so much going on.
It's not that slutty, but I know I don't know. I don't know how words come out of me sometimes. What do you think about it?
It kind of subverts, it keeps subverting your expectation. Like, what's going to happen? Like, if when you say, like, it's like this yellow light, and then you say hideous, like, usually you would think that's something beautiful. And then you say, really, it's you I want to examine, and then me, and that changes that whole thing. And you could have ended with hands on the carpet, but then the step on the fingernails, I haven't seen that before.
Well, and I think it's echoing the hideous.
Wait,
Because
what
there's
is?
something about me in my life. I like to scratch. on soft things. Yeah, I go into something, even and I see it in my writing, like rectangling, enclave. Like I'm using harsh. I don't know how to talk about grammar very well, but I don't know what that word is to describe that. But I do like to play with line breaks a lot. I do like to subvert expectations, and that's just who I am. I don't kind of stick to a regular pattern in anything.
there's a sense of suffering going on.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, because there's abandonment, I think it's like I'm always on the outside looking in, and then when I'm in it, it's really dramatic, and then I'm looking at it again. So I have these rushes in my life that I think appear in my writing, and is reflected there as well. And I think probably people can relate to that. People who have suffered with depression, who are who have big dreams, whatever, who are hard on themselves, or artists in general. Like we notice like the scratches at the edges. We notice like the details of the environment, the corners that are out of place, and we like to live there. And I think that's where I live a lot of the time.
How are you able to capture so much in like small moments? Like when you're writing something and you have to stay in a small moment.
I think a lot of my writing is a small moment.
Yeah, it is. How are you able to do that? Like I find that very hard to do.
Right. I think if I remember your writing, you're more like storytelling maybe.
Yeah.
And it's, I love reading work like that, but for me, I just see life like that. Like I see things in a very, like a film still, you know, like I used to shoot analog, and I'm such an observant, heady person. And I live very granularly. So I'm noticing, I'm like hypersensitive to my environment. So staying in a moment is very easy for me. If not, it gets me in trouble. Like, you know, because I remember everything. I have a photographic memory.
Oh, for real?
Yeah. Nice. Which I didn't realize until an ex-boyfriend pointed it out. Because I'm just like, I'm super like messy. I'll like forget if someone's around me, it stresses me out. And I'll like forget where my keys are around my neck. But like, I'll remember the edge of the door frame being like a cracked red or something. Like I get so into it because it means a lot to me. If I'm talking about the Seine, that's the river in Paris, you know, like that moment meant a lot to me. So I'm going to remember exactly what it felt like 10 years ago to walk across that bridge and be under the light and like have someone next to me. And like, I made this up though, kind of. Like, I don't know about the woman walking out of an enclave. I don't know who that is, but I'm certain I felt it. So I think like staying in a moment is just about like digging into all of your senses. Like, how are you feeling? What is it doing to your body? What is it looking like to you? And don't be afraid to describe it in a way that isn't grammatically correct. Like, a color doesn't look like a color can look like an animal or, mm-hmm. You know, like a breeze can feel like a slap in the face. I mean, that's generic, but you know what I mean?
It means less if it like happened in your real life. It doesn't mean, like, whether it happened or not, it doesn't mean anything. It's the way that you describe it and the feeling that comes from the reader reading it. And that's what makes it real, is the emotion.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And I think that's like even having this conversation, I love the opportunity to have it because every time I talk about poetry, I remember what it means to me. And it's like, it's really like a language that I speak. And I think that I didn't realize that for the longest time, but it gives you permission to just live outside of all of these expectations that the world creates for you. Like, I had a very type A like father who was extremely successful in the business world, but we speak such different languages. However, he supported me going to school for poetry, which was so shocking to me because I still vividly remember walking upstairs at the Arkansas house and hearing him say, "She is not an artist. Like, what is she thinking?" And that stuck with me. It hurt, but I was, and I always have been. And I have to remind myself that because you don't have to like be Monet to be an artist. And I think that when someone doesn't speak that language, you can be so distraught because so many people in the world don't. But damn, is it fascinating. Like, I think poets are the most fascinating, not in an elitist way. I just really appreciate the way that they look at the world and aren't looking to copy anything, really. And I think a lot of artists, there's a lot of people in the world who feel that way, and I like being able to capture it and like speak to different people who see it that way or differently.